Let's talk for a bit about the priesthood of Judaism, or I'm also titling this Leadership in the Old Testament. What we find in the Old Testament is that the leaders of the people, in terms of plural leaders, were really the priests and Levites. We do have Moses and Aaron and that sort of thing. We have a single leader that appears for a while. But what we find throughout the Old Testament is leadership by priests. And it's helpful for us to know about that. We are not that unfamiliar with the concept of priests. We see priests in our own day. One definition is one authorized to perform the sacred rites of a religion, especially as a mediatorial agent between humans and God. And wow, I mean, really, what religion doesn't have priests? I mean, can you think of one? It doesn't. There isn't one that comes. The atheists, they don't see any reason to. Yeah, I guess that would be. They don't see any reason for priests because they say they don't believe God. But they sure are very, very active about trying to disprove that which they do not believe, right? So, here's a Hindu priest today. 6 a.m., rise in prayer. 7 a.m., first bath, followed by the morning duties, washing and cleaning. 8 a.m., breakfast. The lower ranks feed the gods and bathe them. So here you've got, in Hinduism, maybe not too surprisingly, a caste system even among the priests. The lower caste or the lower group of priests are the ones who bathe the gods, feed the gods. Teaching, meeting people's needs or other matters at hand at 9 o'clock. A second bath at 11 and prayers. Then lunch, followed by rest and feeding the gods. These gods are very hungry, aren't they? I guess they're just hungry as people are. Other duties, 1 p.m., funerals, prayers, advice. 3 p.m., third bath. This sounded pretty good. I feel like I would really be clean if I was a Hindu priest, you know. Plus a washing and the dressing of the gods. I don't know if that means. Do we finally get the gods dressed at 3 p.m.? Yeah, flowers. That's what they mean by dressing gods, with flowers and that sort of thing. Priestly rites like sacrifice at 4 p.m., dinner and further meditation, feeding of the gods again at 6. So I guess the gods get fed breakfast, lunch, and dinner as well on that. And then closing and cleaning the temple at 7 p.m. It sounds like a lot more of a... It sounds like a nice schedule compared to what you do, right? Your schedule is get up at 5 a.m., go to class, study all day, stay up to 3 a.m. working on your papers, you know. I hope I'm not motivating you to become Hindu priests, you know. Your SBC priest, yes. We see Egyptian priests, and we see others. We'll talk about Egyptian priests here. In terms of the Egyptian priesthood, there's certainly a choice of these people to be priests. It's different from what you find in Israel. It's not based on genealogy. You didn't have to be from a certain line. But they have their purification laws and duties. And so they in Egypt believe the world was created in order and governed by the gods through Pharaoh. So you find the priesthood tied in to the civil order far more. In contrast to Israel, where the priests often stood against that civil order. They often had God was speaking to them, and priests and prophets. And they had a God for every aspect of life, even putting on makeup. So if you ladies were Egyptian, you would have been probably tying into the Egyptian makeup goddess this morning when you put your makeup on. And the gods must be honored and attended to every detail of life, every day, or life is threatened. So how do they end up becoming priests? Well, here it's conferred by the Pharaoh, which we don't find a similarity in Israel. It's not like the king has to go confer that person to be priest, or they inherited it. It's not that there weren't any genealogical connections here. You could even purchase the priesthood. We find this actually happening in Israel by the time we get to about 180, 170 BC. where the high priesthood ends up becoming purchased. And that ends up leading to what you'll study, I think, in another course called the Maccabean Revolt. That was a revolt against that whole idea. That was part of it. That was part of it, but I don't mean that was the whole thing. And people really wanted to be priests. This is apparently the way that they were dressed. And then the chief priest was the pharaoh. So you see a mixing of the religious and the civil order here, which we don't see happening in the Old Testament Israel, except as they look to the future with the priest king, the Messiah, who will be of the order of Melchizedek, who will also genealogically be of the order of Judah. And the high priest was more of a political advisor. I won't get into a lot of details of all this, but, and then you've got specialist priests and all that in charge of astrology, healing, etc. There's also others who are like lay magicians, community service providers, scribes in this priestly order, and priestesses, women who are involved in singing and music and dance. They had secular careers, and they could marry in Egypt and have children, and we see the same among Israel, do we not? In fact, it's assumed in Israel the priests are going to be married. So where does this whole idea of priests remaining celibate come? It doesn't come from Egypt. It's actually borrowed from Babylon, the idea of celibate priests. And the Catholic Church ends up borrowing that, getting that from what they had in Babylon. They were called to duty 1 month and three. You say, well, that doesn't sound too bad. You work 4 months a year, that's it, kind of. But they also obviously had other duties that besides that, I suspect, especially if they're farmer. I don't know if they're farmer priests or not, but anyway. And before their temple service, they needed to wash and shave and abstain from sexual activity, avoid certain food like fish. I'm not sure why. Maybe the Nile or something like that. I don't. And couldn't wear wool or leather. Interesting, they were not to proselytize or spread their teaching about their God's superiority. Maybe this was a good thing because you've got so many different gods in Egypt and different priests, and otherwise they could be fighting against one another and their God. Yeah, this is religious harmony in its earlier days here. And not to oversee the people's spiritual or moral welfare. That's a very different concept than what we find within the Old Testament, because priests were to be men who were moral. That's about one of the highest requirements. And not to perform acts of appeasement or sacrifice for the benefit of the people. We see this tying on in more as an advisor to the king in Egypt, and we see it among the Baal worship as well, especially when you get to 1 Kings 18, where Elijah is facing against many of these prophets. I suspect they had a priestly function as well, but they ate at Jezebel's table, it says. So she's got these 450 priests of Asherah and 400 priests of Baal. That's 850 people at her table. That's a lot. That's a long table, don't you think? We're talking about, a figure of speech here, that she provided, Ahab and Jezebel provided the food for these prophets. And we'd already talked about that in the prophets one, our session on prophets. So their purpose was to honor and attend to the gods every day, the festivals, feast days, and they had non-religious duties like, for example, being a scribe. They lived in very simple dwellings in Egypt. Best we can tell, this very simple building here was the building of a priest. It's not much to think about. You know, it's kind of hard to get your furniture in there. So how do we, there's no furniture, maybe a bed, I guess. They live very simply. How do we contrast that with the Levitical priesthood that we find in the Old Testament? So let's look at the nature, the requirements, and the uniqueness of the Levitical priesthood, and hopefully it'll help us understand more about really our own nature as God's people. So who were they? They're basically, they were men who represented God to his people. So if that's the case, then they need to be like God, don't they? Here's where we can, is a teaching point for us, or application point for us. What a sad thing when those of us who know Christ are not really representing him well. People are going to be confused. How can we actually be a mediator between God and saved people, or God and unsaved people, if we don't represent him well? So they represented God to the people, and they came from a genealogical order. Here's where it differs from Egypt. Obviously, they were all Jews who came from Jacob, but they came from the tribe of Levi. And what was the distinction between the priests and the Levites? All the other lines of coming from Levi were called Levites. But those from Aaron were called priests. In a sense, you could say the priests were Levites because they came from Levi. But we normally make that distinction between the two. So they were descendants of Levi, but through Aaron. And then all the others who were Levites did not have that lineage to Aaron. In the very earliest days, we know that Levi had three sons, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. And these ended up becoming the three branches of Levites. They had their various responsibilities in carrying the tabernacle. But the Kohathites, specifically through Amram and to Aaron, ended up having the priests, all coming from Aaron. Initially, Eleazar was the high priest. His brother Ithamar was a regular priest, ordinary priest, even though they were brothers. And I think God's way of training the people was actually ingenious in how he wanted to train the people in his ways. Because these Levites didn't get any land inheritance. You see, if they got a land inheritance, they'd be all located in one area of Israel, right? Wherever that might be. But because Levi and Simeon violated the women of Shechem, God made a punishment against their descendants and said, you're not going to get a land allotment. So the Levites were actually spread in towns throughout all of Israel. And the same for the Simeonites. You don't see Simeon listed here, even though there was a tribe of Israel. They had certain cities within the land of Judah, the people of Simeon. So these two people who, if you will, spread the people and attack the people of Shechem and spread them out, God said, okay, you're going to be spread out. Your descendants are going to be spread out. But the ingenious part of the way God did that is he gave the role to teach the people to these people that he spread out. I think that's ingenious. Because we end up with 48 cities that were priestly cities spread all throughout the 12 tribes of Israel. Six of those 48 ended up becoming cities of refuge. And those are places where the priests had a key role, and people who had unintentionally murdered someone, they could find refuge in that city. They were to give devotion to teaching the people. And so the idea was they were not supposed to be farmers, spending their time farming their land and all that like most of the people. Instead, they were to receive tithes, so their needs were taken care of, and sometimes receive spoils of battle. And so they were to have enough money, if the people were to be faithful, without having to spend all that time doing their own farming and that kind of thing. I think it's a phenomenal plan. We see a similar idea today, and this is an adjustment that several of you are making right now. Because you've worked for several years, you've provided for yourself, but now you're shifting your thinking by coming here to the college. And your needs in the days ahead will be provided by the people who love the Lord. In a sense, you'll be kind of like Levites. You will also be spread throughout the land. And I think the same principle applies to the local church as well. Don't put all the teaching ministry of the local church into one person. Spread it out. In my church, yes, I do most of the Sunday teaching along with others who preach and teach with me. But we have a women's ministry, we have a men's ministry, we have a children's ministry, we have a youth ministry, we have a young adult ministry. I don't want to be the only one teaching. You know what I mean? I get this idea basically in how God did it in the Old Testament. If you diversify and you allow other people to be teachers, then they will grow and they'll develop. And the people will be able to ask questions in smaller groups. Even in a class like this, this is too big. With 21 of you, it's too big for me to have a connection with you all. And I just think God, the way he did it is amazing. He had them give the best years of their life to the Lord too, ages 25 to 50. That's my goal in life. I told the Lord, okay, my mother said, after I got my business degree, she said, why don't you be a businessman for a while? If that doesn't work, then you become a missionary. I told her, I said, Mom, God wants my best. You know, I'm 22, just graduated from college. Let me give God the best. And then when I get weaker and, I don't have as much energy and strength and all that when I'm in retirement, then I can serve some other God or something like that. I'm not still planning on doing that. That's what the Lord did for the priests. Age 25 to 50, you serve. And then after that, so it really delights me to see young people who will commit themselves to the Lord and be willing for other people to help meet their needs. So I'm 60 years old, and I've been at this for 38 years. All right, I've been living on the support of other people for the majority of my life. It dawned on me when I was 16 years old, as I was sitting in church and looking up, and it dawned on me that as I was looking at my pastor preaching, hey, everybody around here is actually paying him to study the Bible and tell us what it says. Wow, what a life. That would be fantastic. These people don't feel bad about it. He doesn't feel bad about it. The thought hit me, maybe someday, maybe people would pay me to study God's word and teach it. And then here I am. You guys pay to take this class. Although I don't receive any salary teaching here at SBC. The Lord provides my support from other means. Life is good. I'm blessed. And you are blessed as well. You know, that there are a lot of similarities between Old Testament priests and you. Yes. Yeah, what happened after age 50?
Yes.
Can't say I know. I suspect they would be available for counsel. They could help people, but they wouldn't have the strength to do the work. The physical work of, well, the Levites, they had less physical work here, but carrying the tabernacle, yeah, that was pretty heavy. And also, assisting the priests with carrying these animals, we're talking about very, very heavy animals. So when you're talking about bulls and being right there, I mean, a bull can weigh a ton. And, you know, they needed to be pretty able-bodied. And we'll see later on that they could not be physically defective.
So
how would it apply to us? I would say give the Lord your best during the strongest years of your life, then the time will come when you won't be able to do as much. You know, the time's coming for me when I'll be writing more, doing more things on the internet, and I won't be able to travel to as many countries. You know, I've gone 65 times I've gone out to other countries to train pastors here in Asia, but the time's going to come when that's going to have to be go down quite a bit. So my I'm not going to get stronger over there. Yeah.
Because we are always talking about KPI system, we're always talking, we are very circular in the way we run in church.
We're circular in the way we run in church? In what
secular,
sense?
Secular.
Oh, secular. Secular, yeah. So how are we secular?
Our pastors reach in Singapore, 63, they have to be higher.
Mm-hmm.
They can still pretty, they can carry base, they still can move around, drive around, they move to
coil
the grass.
Okay.
Why
do we have mandatory retirement at age 63? I don't know. I don't agree with that. I mean, I hope to be here beyond that. There is a place for stepping aside when there's a certain number of people who can fulfill a certain responsibility. I have to ask myself that question. By me continuing to teach here, am I preventing from someone else coming in? I certainly don't want that to be the case, especially for all of you. You know, you're Asians. We want you to win or bring you. My philosophy is not to work myself out of ministry. My philosophy is let's work other people in the ministry. And let's do it together. And I'd be happy to teach less classes to expand our faculty. Because I have, you know, like you, too much to do. Jesus said, pray to the Lord of the harvest that he send forth laborers. He said, bring more people. He didn't say, our problem is money and our problem is bureaucracy and all these other things we think is our problem. The problem is willing people to do the work. Well, the idea of retirement works here because these people have heavier work to do, and in the temple, there's a certain number of people that they needed to run the temple. When that was fulfilled and they didn't need more people doing that, you're preparing for the future by bringing young people into it. I hope every one of us is investing ourselves in younger people because we're not going to be here forever either. You know, so we want to, in that sense, step aside and bring other people in. I've told my church many times, you find someone else who can pastor the church, I'm happy, very happy to step aside. I don't want to be, you know, clinging on to this. I'd love to step aside because I'm doing too many things, and I think you can relate to what I'm talking about. So we need to invest ourselves in the next generation. Anyway, I don't know. Any of your other thoughts about this?
Maybe in the olden time,
retirement.
Maybe they don't live so long.
They actually didn't. They didn't live so long.
Not compared to the pre-modern.
Yeah, you're right.
Because still we have medical care. You know, we have people can.
50 years old is pretty old. When we're talking about Old Testament, compared to nowadays. 50 years old, boy, you're kind of just getting started.
Because I've been to
not really, but.
And I've seen people who are about my age, they have to go through the rigor of life. They travel long distances. The food they eat is not as good as we over here.
Yeah.
They don't have a lot of medical care. Their tooth are dropping, some of them, because they don't have dentists around. So in this perspective, I think 50 is quite considered quite a
advanced
age.
Advanced
in local context,
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's not a direct parallel. We don't take the thing as direct parallel. It's more like the principles.
This is not, yeah, this is not telling us that we serve the Lord 25 years. Okay.
Right now, we have people, you know, you want to find a church, find a pastor, it's going to be hard for you to find because it's like, what? I have to have a call from God and all this stuff, right? It's also different. If you think about pastor and the Levites. The other thing I thought about is that not only that, they are also provided, as a Levites, they are provided the land, the tithings, and everything. Over here is very different. I mean, like, pastor is very different. So when you say that after 50, after 60, why should they retire? Some people, I think that different stage of our life are different. I mean, like now that we are this age and when we are younger, so stewardship of our energy. So if you are 63, you really don't have the energy to run the church. I think that it's good for the whole church and good for you to actually step down. Perhaps maybe do like what Pastor Rick talked about. It's more on the mentoring. Actually, after 50 years, you should be doing more of mentoring.
Yeah.
Taking a few people rather than running the show.
Honestly, I think at every stage in life, we ought to be into mentoring.
Yes.
If you're 20-something, you got to be mentoring people. Because every one of us, as people have said from a New Testament concept, everybody should be a Paul and a Timothy. You know? They should be a Paul to someone else, and they should be a Timothy, having someone train them, and then they should be, we all should be investing ourselves in others. All right, let me share a couple more concepts. I'm going to jump to slide 36, talk about requirements, and then we'll take a break. Leviticus 21 gives the requirements to be a priest. They need to be ritually clean. All right? They need to have their heads not be shaven. Okay? Some of them, they would lose their hair. Okay? Some of these guys got bald like we do. But you don't do it yourself. You know, you don't shave your whole head. God wanted them in a more of a natural state. Beards, bodies. They could not marry a divorcee or a former harlot. In fact, they had to marry a virgin to be a priest. That would prohibit a lot of people, even in the line of Aaron, let's say, from being a priest. And they could not be physically disabled. Verses 17 to 21. From our day, where we say, oh, that's just not fair, everybody should be treated the same, we have to look into the reality. These people were doing very, very heavy lifting. It was quite a demanding job. And it actually wasn't fair to the other priests to have one priest who really couldn't handle very much because of a physical defect. They still could eat the priestly food, right? But they didn't have the responsibilities that an able-bodied priest could do if they had a handicap. There you see the justice, the love of God, the grace of God in all of that. How are they different? I'm going to go to slide 40. They were different from other pagan priesthoods because it was genealogy that determined whether they were qualified. You could have many godly people, and they weren't. If they weren't descendants of Aaron, they still couldn't be priests. The high priesthood especially needed to be appointed by God. The salary was paid by the worshipers, not by the king, not by the court. Here you've got, they should be ministering to the people, and if they're not ministering to the people, then the people won't be so motivated to support them. It's interesting, when you get to the end of the New Testament, Nehemiah finds that when he comes back to Israel, the people weren't paying the priests. They weren't being faithful in giving their tithes, and the priests had left the temple, and they're out there farming their fields and all that. Well, is that a bad thing? Yeah, it's a really bad thing, because they don't have the time to actually teach the people. If I had to all the demands of working in a full-time job, as well as the other things I do in teaching God's Word, I'd be, honestly, I think I'd be a horrible teacher. I wouldn't have the time I would need to actually have the study and the time to actually do this. So they didn't get any tribal allotment, which spread them throughout the land. God put very high standards of morality on them that we saw in Leviticus 21. Do you think there's a parallel for us today? Especially those of us who are in leadership. I understand the priesthood of the believers. We all should have these high standards. But we should be looking at 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1. The qualities of an elder is something that every one of us, male or female, should be, you know, seeking. And then they sacrificed 2 weeks annually where they would, David reorganized the priesthood so the division of the priests would go up to the temple for 2 weeks a year. Does that mean they only work 2 weeks a year and the other 50 weeks they just, you know, twiddled their thumbs? No. They were involved in training the people, teaching the people, raising the people's understanding of God during that time. The point is that the high Israel's priesthood was not to follow the pattern of the world. God had a very different order for Israel's priests. Now, there's a lot of stuff here that I could say, but let me just close it with saying that Jesus is our high priest. Hebrews 5 says he's appointed by God, and yet he is God. I'm up to slide 50. He is appointed by God's oath. And Jesus' duty was not to offer other sacrifices, but to atone for our sin and intercede for God's people, which is his role right now. His role is very different from the Aaronic priests, because as a descendant of Judah, he's from the order of Melchizedek, not from Aaron. In terms of personality, he's the sinless Son of God who is a priest for eternity. Not even just life. And he offered himself for atonement of sins outside of Jerusalem, whereas the other priests, their ministry was to offer sacrifices over and over again inside Jerusalem, annually, in terms of the Day of Atonement, where Jesus was once for all to obtain forgiveness for the sins of the world and open access to all believers for God. Whereas even from the high priesthood idea, it's only once annually. And they have no current work right now, whereas Jesus' work is intercession for believers at the right hand of the throne of God. And the relationship for all of us is, as believer priests, we have a similar role, you might say. I'll jump to slide 58. That's for male and female. Here's where we bring the women into it. Even though we didn't have women, female priests in the Old Testament, we are called believer priests today. 1 Peter 2, 5. We're a holy nation, a royal priesthood. And our New Testament priesthood functions are simpler than those of the pagan and the Old Testament priests. We have no need for a human mediator between God and man today. So I feel a little uncomfortable when churches are calling certain people priests, because all of us really are priests in the New Testament sense, that have a direct and personal relationship with God, serving the one true God and the moral standing that you see required of Old Testament priests. Wow, that's a good pattern for all of us today, whether you're a Christian leader or not. I mean, in reality, every one of us should be a Christian leader. We're leading somebody. Of course, we don't need to offer any animal sacrifices to atone for sins, because we're looking to the Lord Jesus in that regard. And our life is a sacrifice, you know. So our duty and privilege is to keep in step with the Spirit. Christ's yoke was heavy, but the yoke he gives to us is easy in comparison, and the burden is light. So may we in our busy schedules and lifestyles find rest even as we serve God in our lives. Peter says, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. So you are a living stone in God's building, so to speak. The church is compared to being like the temple. And each one of us is kind of like a living stone in God's temple as a priest to offer spiritual sacrifices to the Lord. What a high and holy privilege the Lord gives to each of us. Don't you agree? I pray that you'll serve Him better by seeing this short look at what we see in the Old Testament.